welcome back here for another episode of Roll Digs, the official podcast of Montana Tech Athletics. I'm lucky enough to sit down with our new chancellor, Johnny McLean, as Chancellor McLean sits down to chat about, kind of fill us in on where he comes from, what brings him to Montana, and kind of what brought him to be here at Montana Tech. He is a guy that I've been impressed with from word go. He has just hit the ground running and has already made big changes and has done an incredible amount of good for not only our campus, but our community, and certainly even bigger things on the horizon. So we have a lot to cover. We're going to talk about his history. We're going to talk about the importance of mentorship and more. Ladies and gentlemen, again, thanks for joining us for Roll Digs with my chat with Chancellor Johnny McLean. Chancellor Johnny McLean, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you, Paul.
It's always good to see you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited about this podcast.
I'm not going to lie. I think I see you in the hyper more than I see Jeff Graham in the hyper.
Well, no comment. we're not talking about personnel issues here.
Okay, all right. I apologize. This isn't the forum for that. Is that what you're saying?
But I will say I won a pretty sweet gift last night that involved Coach Jeff Graham. And I am now officially his number one fan.
Yeah, the T-shirt that you won in the White Elephant Exchange last night might be one of the most beautiful things I've ever encountered in my entire life.
It's going to be a new staple at Ore Digger basketball games.
Yeah,
I'll tell
so
you that.
Home game January 9th. You've got to look for our chancellor, and as this shirt is going to blow your mind. I think there's merchandising. Possibilities in that shirt.
I like it.
I do as well. Sir, thank you for this. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I'm excited. There's a lot of good things happening at Montana Tech, and if I can have an opportunity to share some of those with the broader world, I'd love the opportunity.
So let's start with you a little bit, if you don't mind. You know, I really look forward to whenever I get to see you. When you talk to you, you're in every building. It feels like anytime I walk through, you are very, very hands-on. And I think you're an exceptional listener. I think it makes you a great leader. And I think you take everything to heart. And, you know, our short time together, I have been nothing but impressed with the way you handle yourself, with the way you've handled campus. But let's talk about what got you here. Where were you born and raised?
Well, I appreciate you saying all that, Paul. And
I'll continue to suck up as the show goes. Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah, don't hold back. No, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
And my father grew up most of his childhood in California. My mother grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. They met out in California and moved back to Tennessee to be closer to my mother's parents.
Okay.
My grandparents. And grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. And I grew up watching Vanderbilt football lose to the University of Tennessee year after year after year.
Okay.
And so this year was a little bit different. And
yeah.
A lot of folks in Nashville are now pretty excited about the old Commodores.
Are you on the page that Vandy should have been in the college football playoffs?
Well, I probably shouldn't comment on that.
Okay. All right. We'll leave that one go.
But I think the playoffs are looking exciting, right? Yes.
All right. That was very good. You're right on the fence. That was really good balance. Nice work. Siblings?
I have two brothers.
Okay.
And then I got a stepsister and a stepbrother when I was in my teens. And a couple of those folks are in Nashville. One's in Washington, D.C. One's in Los Angeles, and but we all get back together in Tennessee about once a year, and then actually they were all, most of them were out here in Montana over the summer, so and my folks are all in Nashville, Tennessee, and they came out and got to know Butte and Montana Tech in October, mm-hmm. which I think we'll talk about in a little bit, and they all fell in love with Butte. And they're all really impressed by Montana Technological University. And I didn't go home. I didn't go to Nashville for Thanksgiving, but my brothers did. And they were all wearing Montana Tech gear
nice.
Around the Thanksgiving table, which is pretty cool.
Solid.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yep. That said, you're a pretty tight family, huh?
You know, we get together each year at least once, and
that's great.
And we're all, what I found with my brothers is we were about as different as we could be when we were growing up.
Okay.
And now in middle age, we are kind of converging into a very similar lives.
Okay.
And it's kind of interesting to watch.
That idea that a triangle is two points meeting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I grew up in Tennessee and then went to college in South Carolina. And then I got an opportunity to, and I studied geology.
Okay.
And then I got an opportunity to go to a graduate program up in Syracuse, New York.
Okay.
So again, studying geology. And while I was in my master's program, I moved out to Montana for my first Montana move in January of 2003.
Okay.
And ever since, it was sight unseen, and I ended up moving to Stevensville, Montana.
Solid.
And I substitute taught up and down the Bitterroot Valley, making about $45 a day, which, by the way, is not comfortable living.
Especially in that direction. It's not anywhere, granted, but especially over there.
And so I had to move away. But ever since January of 2003, I've been moving back to Montana. And I've been trying to figure out how to be here because I love this state. I love the mountains. And I love the people. And this latest time moving to Montana was 4 years ago when I moved up to Dillon from southern Utah. And then 7 months ago, I got to move to Butte, and I'll tell you, there's no doubt in my mind, Butte is the most unique city I've ever lived in, and probably the most unique city I've ever been to.
I want to talk about that. I want to get into that, because I love getting people's opinion that really don't have much of a perspective on Butte until they're kind of thrust into it.
That's exactly what happened to me. You know, I'd lived in and out of Montana for, you know, 20 years, and you know, you hear about Butte,
mm-hmm.
but until you...
Usually not in a positive sense.
Until you move here, until you experience this community, you don't get it. And what I've experienced is if somebody moves here and they say, I want to be part of this community, I want to learn about this community, and I think it's a pretty special place. The people here open their arms so wide, and yep. they take you in. And that is what has happened to me and to JC and our family. And when our folks have visited, they felt it. To the point where, I think I was telling you the other day, JC's father came here for a football game in September, and he loved it. He fell in love with the tailgate. He fell in love with the town. He fell in love with the football team, the school. And then he started following from Salt Lake City. He was watching the games every week. And he would send us messages. I mean, we've gotten more messages from him about Montana Tech football than we have about anything else, literally. And, yeah, people just fall in love with this place.
Yeah.
And
how do you explain it to someone? So before your parents came over, or even like your siblings, how would you explain Butte to someone who had never experienced it before?
The way I describe Butte is that it's this place with a hardworking history, a history that's ingrained in the people that. In which the people have had to overcome really difficult situations, and not just once, but a cycle of difficulty, of challenge, and they've overcome it. And through that perseverance, they've developed a sense of pride that is authentic. And it is a different sense of pride than anywhere else I've been. And I've been in some prideful places. I lived in Texas. I grew up in the South. Mm-hmm. You know, these are places with a lot of pride.
Yeah, very much so.
But those kinds of, you know, that variety of pride is pride in a place. The pride in Butte is a pride in that perseverance, the pride that folks know they've been through hard times again. I mean, they've been through hard times in the past. They will go through hard times in the future. Mm-hmm. There, nobody doubts that. And everybody knows they're going to come together as a community and they're going to persevere. They're going to make it through and they're going to come out on the other side. And, you know, one of the reasons I asked Joe McClafferty to be our commencement speaker is because he taught me a lot about Butte's history.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he told me was he was describing Butte in the 80s when he was growing up. And he described all these different monikers that Butte is given. The richest hill on earth, Copper City, Mining City.
Can-do City.
And that's when he said in the 80s, Don Peoples came up with coined the term Can-do City.
Yep.
I got to meet Don Peoples.
Yep.
Just last week.
Okay.
At a dedication.
At the dedication.
And I'd heard about this guy for so long. And to me, because Joe McClafferty described this place in such clear, you know, terms, and he included Don Peoples in it, it was really special for me to meet Don Peoples.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And
connecting tendrils or make everything.
Yeah, and all I know about Don Peoples is that he was a big deal. Mm-hmm. I don't even know, like, I know that there's a huge history with Don Peoples contributing to this community. I don't know what those contributions are.
Yeah.
I'm still too new. I'm still learning about all this stuff. But I just know he's a big deal. But he, because of that description from Joe McClafferty, he now is part of my conception of Butte.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool, mm-hmm. you know? And there are these characters that go along with this place.
Are we character heavy as opposed to other communities you've been in? Because that feels like one to me where I think it feels like every community and every, especially neighborhoods when you get into bigger places, have their list of characters. It feels like we are character heavy to me.
You know, such an interesting term or phrase. And I will say yes, but I'll describe it differently.
Okay, please do.
I think you're saying there are so many characters. What I would say is there is so much character
mm-hmm.
in Butte.
Yeah.
And everywhere has a character. Everywhere has a vibe. Nowhere has a vibe like Butte. And you know, I've been here 7 months and I moved here in the summer. And so I got to see the summer cycle with the folk festival, Henri Ra, you know, all the summer events. And then I got to see the fall. And this fall, you know, as you well know, was a historic fall with our football team. Mm-hmm. It's just been an incredible fall on campus in so many ways.
Yeah.
And I'm also getting more and more involved in the community. That's been incredible. And now we're entering winter. And now I get to see the winter cycle mm-hmm. go through and I can't wait.
we haven't seen a whole lot of it yet.
We haven't seen a lot of it yet, but the stories of Butte winters have framed my expectations.
Okay.
So I'm ready for it.
I'll be interested to compare the expectations to the reality of the first winter, because it's going to be a far cry from the second winter, and that'll be a far cry from the third winter.
Because they're all different.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, I've lived in Montana several times, and I've lived in Syracuse, New York. That's a place that gets a lot of snow, you know, so I've experienced some winters. But being right here on the western slope of the Continental Divide, it's a serious place.
Yes, it is.
It's a somebody described it a while ago to me as it's no joke. You know?
Solid.
And so I'm ready for it.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to all the wintertime events. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be cool. This place is just incredible to me.
Let me go back. So we're on the west side of the Continental Divide. That brings me back to your geology. That feels like one that all the geologists I know, and I had a dear friend that we were hung out together, we ski patrolled together, that he was a geologist. It feels like rock hounds are born that way. Or do you remember a moment that turn you towards geology, or has it just always kind of been at your core?
I'll tell you exactly how it happened. So I told you my father grew up in the Bay Area. He when he was in middle school, he got connected with this packer that would take groups up to the Sierra Mountains.
Okay.
And so he ended up spending every summer of his teenage years through college, all summer long in the Sierra Mountains, helping with these pack trips. And so then when my brothers and I were born and old enough, he started taking us to the Sierra Mountains. I fell in love with the mountains. And so I just wanted to be in the mountains, you know. And coming from Tennessee, I mean, Eastern Tennessee has some mountains, but they're not the same as the mountains in the West.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get, and I would save up every year so that I could come out for my one trip to the mountains when I was in college and through my time at Syracuse. But when I was in college, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. And I wanted to be in education, and so I had one good teacher in high school, and that teacher taught English. So I thought I wanted to be an English teacher. So I was taking English classes, majoring in English, and I was going to be an English teacher. And it wasn't going so hot.
Okay.
But I took an earth science class, a geology class, just as my science GE, you know, and I didn't know what it was. I'd never even really thought about geology. But for our labs, we went out on field trips and we learned about how mountains were built. And I thought, I can go to school and learn about mountains and be outside in the mountains. I'd rather do that than what I was doing in my English classes. So I went to my English advisor, my faculty advisor in the English department. I said, hey, I'm going to switch to geology. And my that faculty member, I'll never forget, he said, yeah, it wasn't really working out. And so that was the rest is history. And then I studied geology for 10 years. And so it was, for me, it was all about the mountains. It was learning about why there are mountains here, not there, mm-hmm. how mountains are built. It was all focused on the mountains. And so when I moved to Montana, it was really to be close to the mountains. It took me a while to figure out how to stay in Montana.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there just aren't always the kinds of jobs. And we see that with our students. Sometimes they have to leave before they come back later in their careers. And because, you know, there aren't a lot of people in Montana. It's not a populous state. But the mountains are here. And if you can make it work and if you can find a career that works for you, it's a wonderful state to live in.
So as you went to college, that was the first thought. Was it education initially?
It was English, to be an English teacher initially, and then I switched to geology my sophomore year, and the rest. Then I got all my degrees are in geology.
Who was the teacher that flipped that switch for you that made you want to be an educator?
You know, it's so interesting that you asked me that, because I have told that story countless times.
Really?
I cannot tell you how many times I've told that story, because everybody asks, how did you get into geology? I've told that story so many times. Nobody's ever asked me who that teacher is.
Okay.
And I always like try to be really vague about it, you know?
I think that's important, because I look back, my fifth grade teacher changed everything for me.
So this was my sophomore year.
Okay.
Okay. And what I learned throughout my 4 years of high school is, now looking back, I think the better way to describe this is that teachers have very difficult jobs.
Very.
And high school teachers have very difficult jobs. And I did not make it easier for them. And I made sure I was having a good time in class and out of class. And that isn't always...
go hand in hand with teachers enjoying your presence?
Yeah, But I'll just talk about this teacher.
Okay.
Sophomore year, his name is Coach King.
Okay.
Dennis King.
What did he coach?
He coached basketball and he coached cross country, and I ran cross country under him.
Okay.
He didn't know anything about cross country. But he was an entertaining basketball coach to watch, and he was pretty good.
Okay. Was he a motivator?
Yeah, he's like a Bobby Knight style motivator.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Entertaining to watch.
Okay.
I didn't play basketball for him. I'm not sure how entertaining it was to play for him.
Yep.
But he taught English. And I remember this, the reason I thought think he was so good was because we were sophomores, 10th grade, and we would read some short story or some passage or whatever, and he would lead discussions. He wasn't just telling us what we need to know. He would lead discussions, and he would ask us questions as if we were human beings.
Yeah.
As if we had something to say about our thoughts about whatever we were reading or talking about. And he brought a level of respect to a 10th grader that I didn't experience, or at least I didn't notice mm-hmm. with my other teachers. And I really respected that. We had a project about Julius Caesar. And he taught like four, five, six classes, you know, and we were all doing Julius Caesar projects. And so the class had to make a video. And it was like a talk show about Julius Caesar. And then each class would compete against each other for the best show, the best host. There were Academy Awards and everything.
Solid.
You know, he got a bunch of other teachers to be judges. And
Do you have a table with a coffee cup on the side, like Letterman style?
Best guest, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so our class decided to make our show the Johnny Show. I shaved my head, except for in the back, in hair, it's spelled Johnny. So we had, you know, Julius Caesar as a guest. We had all the characters and everything, you know. And then we made a commercial. And this is in the 90s, you know. This is mid-90s. Yep. Like, we had camcorders. I mean, there's no phones or anything, you know.
Yeah.
And so we made this commercial. And it was a Nike commercial, okay. And so Julius Caesar, the guy that we had, you know, the student, our, you know, classmate who was playing Julius Caesar in the talk show, he was out on a run in the park, and he had his sandals on, okay, old school, like, yep. Roman sandals.
Yep.
And then he stopped to take a rest, and then he started watching everybody running by, and they were all wearing these Nikes. And he said, man, everybody's got these Nikes on. And then Brutus comes up. And Brutus has Nikes on too. And Julius Caesar looks at him. He says, et tu, Brute? That was the end of the commercial. Come on. We won an Academy Award for the best commercial.
Do we still have it? We can put it in the show notes, so we can.
I don't know. I will say the acne was pretty heavy back then, so I don't know if I'm ready for that. But so anyway, Coach King changed my perspective on what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in education. I wanted to be a Coach King. I wanted to be like Coach King, and the reason is because I realized that young people, can be influenced. And I was looking around myself. I was looking around, you know, my world, and I saw some people being influenced very positively. And I saw some people being influenced very negatively. And I saw right at that kind of teenage years, including into college, those are critical times when, if you have the right mentorship, you can be put on a great path. And if you don't have the right mentorship, you can be put on a really challenging path.
Yeah.
And I thought Coach King is doing it right. And if I can be a positive influence and help mentor, you know, people who are right at that stage, if I can help mentor them into a positive path, I can make a difference in the world. So that's what I wanted to do. And I thought I wanted to do it in English because that's what Coach King did.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that that's not where my skill set was. but then when I learned about geology and I learned that I could study the mountains and study the formation of mountains. Then I thought, well, maybe I'll teach high school earth science or environmental science or something like that, which I did for a year. I taught earth science in North Carolina for a year back in 2003-04, that school year.
Okay.
And that was a hard job. And teachers really do have a hard job, and I got a lot of respect for them. But that's how I got into geology and how I got into education.
Dude, so is that mentorship, did that continue when you get to the point where you are teaching classes and getting those? Are you contacting Coach King, or are you guys still, were you in communication as you got started and moving forward in your career?
I can guarantee you he has no idea the impact that he made on my life.
Gotcha.
And I can guarantee you he made a huge impact on countless lives that he'll never know about. And that's the crazy part about education, because we see these students come through our classes, and some of them probably aren't impacted, but some of them really are. And it's hard to tell which one is which sometimes.
Yep.
Because you never know what that thing that you said, you never know when that's going to change somebody's life, you know. And he did it for me, and you know, I taught for a lot of years, and maybe there's some students out there that I've had a positive impact on.
Thanks for sharing that. That's fantastic.
I'm a big proponent of I think all the time about mentorship. I think we all need mentors throughout our lives, and I've been very lucky. I've had some incredible mentors, starting way back then, you know, with Coach King and some others back in my childhood, and all through my career. It's very important to me. And when I first started teaching college down in Southern Utah University, I read this article, and the article was about, it was written by a doctor, a medical doctor, a surgeon. And the article is basically him saying, you know, I'm at the prime of my career. I've done thousands of surgeries, literally thousands of surgeries. And I'm at the top of my game. And then I look at, he used Rafa, this was back in the like early 2010s, you know.
Okay.
And so the examples may not be great now, but they, you know, at the time they were right on. He said, I look at Rafael Nadal and Tiger Woods, two of the best athletes in their sports of all time.
And when they were on top of their game, nobody was in their league.
Right. When they were on top of their game, they each had a coach. And here I am, this medical doctor, you know, this is what the article is saying. Here I am as this medical doctor, done thousands of surgeries. I don't have a coach. Am I better than Tiger Woods or Rafael Nadal? Why would they have a coach and I don't have a coach? And basically what he's saying is they have a mentor. Why don't I have a mentor? And so he reached out to doctor who was on his rotations when he was in med school. The doctor's now retired, so he has a little bit extra time. And he invited the guy to come in and watch him perform some surgeries. And immediately, the guy, he thought the guy was going to have, you know, a comment or two. He had pages of notes about ways that he could improve.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed how he went about his practice. And so then I realized, man, I'm a first-year faculty member. I don't even know what I'm doing. And I don't have a mentor. Here's Rafael Nadal and Tiger Woods and this surgeon. They all have mentors. And so then I started, in my professional life, I started really seeking out mentorship. And it's really benefited. I think it's benefited me. I've learned a lot.
I think that's incredible wisdom. The idea of noticing it as a kid in Coach King, the idea of that mentorship being positive or negative, you know, I think it's real easy to notice the negative side in high school, but the coming out of it positive, it takes a lot more work.
Yeah, looking inward, wanting to get better, and recognizing that there are people who can help.
Yes.
and who want to help.
Yeah.
And I've had mentors throughout my career. And they do help. And so I encourage, when I'm talking to the folks who I'm working with, I encourage all of them to make sure they're finding some mentorship, even if the person doesn't know that they're mentoring them.
Yeah.
You know, find people that you want to learn from and emulate and learn what not to do from. I mm-hmm. mean, it's all mentorship. It's all learning.
Yeah.
That's
solid.
That took a turn from what I thought we were talking
about. Enjoyed that. I appreciate it. Let's talk about your time here. You know, the job posts, so to speak. I mean, like any other position. Talk about what drew you to Montana Tech, about the position. What were the things that were really exciting for you or that, you know, made you interested initially?
You know, the search process was a journey in and of itself.
Was it?
And so I haven't really spoken publicly about it, but I'm happy to. I was at UMW, mm-hmm. our rival to the south in Dillon, Montana. And I'd been there. I ended up being there for 3.5 years. So I'd been there for, you know, 2.5 years or so. And Dillon's a great place, mm-hmm. and it's a good school. And I had great colleagues there. It was a challenging job. I was the provost, which is the number two person on campus. And the provost is over all of academic affairs. And at that school, it was over all of student affairs as well, or basically all of student affairs. And it was a very meaningful job, very difficult job. And it was a great place. And I was learning a ton. I wasn't on the hunt for a new position.
Yeah.
And when Les Cook, the chancellor here, announced his retirement, I was surprised. I thought that the chancellor at UMW, Mike Reed, was going to retire before Les. And so it just took me by surprise. I knew by that time I had worked with Montana Tech enough through the Board of Regents meetings and just the Montana University system. I knew a bit more about Montana Tech than I had, you know, previously. And I knew it was a great school. I knew that it had really strong STEM programs. I knew that their athletics programs were really good because they kept beating, you know, especially basketball and volleyball, they kept beating UMW. And so I knew it was a great school. And I knew they were going to be looking for somebody in STEM. And I knew that the Bureau is here because that's a geology, you know, focused organization. And so the thought did cross my mind when Les announced his retirement. Oh, maybe one day Montana Tech might be a place where I could end up. But I'd only been back in Montana for 2.5 years at that time, and I had a lot of work to do at UMW. And the things I was trying to do at UMW were going to take time. I was trying to play the long game with a lot of the systems that we were trying to put into place, and it's hard to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't really, anyway, they posted the search. Montana Tech posted the position and started the search. And I decided, no, I'm not going to apply. I got a lot of work to do here and I'm happy in Dillon.
Did it take quite a bit of soul searching to get to that point, or was it pretty instinctual to say I wasn't going to apply immediately?
The thought was more like, I'm not sure my career has progressed enough yet. And so let's watch how this goes. A lot of university chancellors and presidents, you know, they go through, they cycle through. Mm-hmm. There are some, you know, the average is probably 5 to 7 years. And so my thought at the time was, let's just see what happens. I'm gonna keep focusing where I am, mm-hmm. and I got a lot of work to do right here. So then they failed the search in the fall. This was fall of 24. They failed the search. And so then I thought, okay, well, maybe those folks aren't what they were looking for. You know, I'd read their CVs and stuff. And so maybe I should think about this a little more. So I talked with JC a bunch about it, and we weren't quite there. And what we figured was people in this state know me well enough, you know, in the Montana University system, mm-hmm. just through all the work that the state does together. People know me well enough. If I would be a good candidate, someone's going to ask me to apply. And if nobody asked me to apply, I probably shouldn't apply. And so a few weeks went by, a couple months went by, and nobody was reaching out. And I thought, okay, I'm good here. This is a great school. It's a great town. Dillon's a great place. And then when somebody reached out, I thought, well, I went home to JC and I said, JC, this person reached out and said I should apply. And I wasn't really expecting this, but her direct quote was, "That's the last criterion. So let's go for it." She said, "That's the last criterion."
Wow.
And so it's like, well, we had talked about it enough and it felt like a good fit. But there was that one piece that didn't fall into place yet. And when that fell into place, we said, okay, let's go for it. So then I started doing all my research on Montana Tech. And the more I learned about this place, not only the more impressed I was, but also the better it felt as a fit for my background, my expertise, yeah. my history with ConocoPhillips in the oil industry, my history in environmental engineering with Morrison Merrily, which is an engineering firm in Montana, my long history in natural resources, and my route through the provost office down in southern Utah, and all the geology field work I did with students in southern Utah, and then my experience as a provost in Dillon, it's just all started coming together. So put the application together and really. I mean, I'll tell you, there are very few, if any, at the time, there were very few, if any, moments that I prepared better for than that face-to-face interview. I came to this place and I just knew what I wanted to say and how I wanted to say it, and I understood well enough. I didn't. For not being on the campus, I had done my research, you know.
Yeah.
And I knew what I wanted, how I wanted to lead this place, and I was able to articulate it. And I left that interview thinking, in fact, I talked about this to a group of student athletes. I prepared for that moment more than I had prepared for anything. And I performed at the top of my game. And when I left, I knew that I couldn't have done any better.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get the job. And it was a lesson. There's a lesson in there yeah. where you can do everything perfectly. You can do everything right. And perform at your peak and still lose. And then somehow, and I still don't know the whole story, but somehow the other candidate who originally got the offer had to back out. And so fortunately, the search committee still wanted to offer me the job. And all I can say about that now is I hope people are – seeing that it's a good fit. I certainly feel like it's a good fit, and I couldn't be happier.
Can I ask you, and I hope it's not an awful question, but how does human nature kick in there where they offer it to someone else, and then that idea of to be absolutely blunt, and again, I apologize, but the idea of almost like second fiddle, like, oh, we didn't offer it to you the first time, but now, did any of that come into your into your mindset? Because that feels like something that would come from me, but the time I've been around you, it feels like something that would just fall off your back like water on a duck.
So I've been in higher ed now for enough years to know that search committees are complex entities.
Yeah.
And search committees make decisions based on a lot of factors. And they make recommendations based on a lot of factors. And that doesn't mean that that I'm not a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that I'm not qualified. And I'll just tell you that as soon as I saw the other candidate's CV, when, because it was a public, you know, they announced everything publicly and posted CVs and stuff. She's an incredible individual, incredible candidate, incredible scientist, and huge leadership experience. So the question to me wasn't, is she better than I am or am I better than she is? The question is, what direction does this university want to go?
Yeah.
And I know that there are, you know, we got almost 400 employees, 2,500 students, huge alumni network, community, and every single person wants something different.
Yeah.
And so it just happens that this particular search committee leaned in one direction. At first, that didn't work out. And fortunately, they didn't cancel me out as an option.
And I apologize for even asking, but just that the human nature side of it, because you and I discussed some issues in my own mentality yesterday, and I certainly would have, I know myself well enough to know that there would have been anger, resentment. The competition part of me drives me crazy, but it would have eaten at me very hard.
So the biggest reaction or response internally for me was that through that process of researching the school and preparing for the interviews, I fell in love with the place. And when I found out that I didn't get the job, I knew it wasn't because I didn't perform.
Good.
I knew it wasn't because I couldn't do the job. I knew that it was because of complex search committee politics and search committee conversations. And it was more just a realization. Fortunately, it was a temporary realization, but a realization that this place that I fell in love with wasn't going to be part of my future. That was hard.
Yep.
And then a couple weeks later, I remember when I kind of found out, I was down in Southern Utah. Our kid was graduating from Southern Utah University. So we went down there for his graduation. We're all sitting in a circle at the house that he was living in down there. And a bunch of family was there. You know, we probably had 10 or 12 people sitting in a circle just kind of celebrating him and his graduation and his girlfriend's graduation. They were both graduating. And his girlfriend's family were there too. And I got like three or four text messages within about 30 seconds. One was from Les Cook. One was from Mike Reed, the chancellor at UMW. One was, for, you know, I got two or three others within like 30 seconds. And I thought, oh my gosh, what is happening up in Montana, you know? So I read through it and, you know, they all said that she pulled out and they were all asking me what that means. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. What do you think it means, you know? And then there was a very weird, like 2-3 weeks where first I wasn't hearing anything. Then I had some of the most interesting.
That's got to be horrible.
It was very strange. And then I had some of the most interesting subsequent interviews that I've ever had.
Really?
And then I'm going to try to say this. And then the search committee chair, Tyler Trevor, gave me a call. And you might have to edit some of this out.
Nope.
And he...
I love it.
He said, we want you to be the next chancellor, Montana Tech.
Is that why you just feel everything kind of go cold? And
I just collapsed. I just broke down into tears right on the spot. And
and that's why you're right for this. So in all of my things that I say, as I've gotten older, I also am a very big believer in if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. If it's meant to happen, it is going to happen. You were meant to be here. You were meant to hear those words.
For a second, I was thinking, man, he's really good because he knows he needs to talk while I try to compose myself. And then you stop talking.
I was only going to give you a brief second there.
It was a very meaningful experience. And I broke down into tears, and I couldn't believe it. And then I went through a couple more interviews because I think he preempted it a little bit. But it happened, and I couldn't wait. I could not wait to get started, and the expected start date was going to be July 1st or August 1st, and I said, no, I want to start in June because I couldn't wait. So I started in June 1st, overlapped with Les Cook for a month, which was very helpful. And I'll tell you, Les Cook, he was incredibly supportive of me throughout that whole process and since. He was one of my biggest fans and biggest supporters, and I owe a lot to that guy. And this university was a dream for a new chancellor to step into, because not many people get to step into a university as the chancellor or president with enrollments rising, the budget balanced. Yeah. The athletics teams all set to have historic seasons. The academic programs, the highest return on investment of any university in the state of Montana. Every single metric that you can think of, Montana Tech was in a good position with. And those were the keys that Les Cook handed me. That's unbelievable to me. That doesn't mean there weren't and aren't issues that we're working on and so forth. You know, there always will be, but
and there's always ways to get better.
Exactly. But the health of the university was unbelievable. And you know, that I don't just owe that to Les Cook. The whole team has been working so hard for a lot of years to get into this position. And to take the keys from Les into this kind of situation was just I just feel so fortunate, so lucky.
So you come in June. You kind of, you're like, all right, guess what? I'm coming in early. I'm gonna jump to the front of this ship and let's go. Let's kind of lead there to the convocation. You wanted to talk about those first 100 days. Briefly, and we'll put it in the show notes and allow people to watch it if they haven't seen it. And I told you earlier I'd continue to suck up, but there are a couple of speeches that have stuck with me for a long time. And one of them, probably the most meaningful and one of the most beautiful and heart-wrenching things I've ever seen in my life, was Leo McCarthy talking at his daughter's funeral. That was, I thought, a watershed moment for Butte, Montana. That's a story for another day, but your convocation speech in front of a group of high powered individuals in this city that mean an awful lot. I was, for lack of a better term, I was absolutely stunned. Not only the day of, but like talking to people, like kind of revisiting parts that you talked about, things that were important to you. really felt like one of the more significant things that I have ever come across. And you were fantastic in that respect.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Let me tell you what built up to that.
Okay.
So before I even started, I knew I wanted to, you know, do a listening tour and so forth. I was talking to one of our regents, you know, our board of regents governs all the Montana University system. I was talking to Regent Bao about, you know, how I wanted to do this 125-day listening tour because, you know, we're honoring the 125th Indeed. Anniversary. And he gave me some good advice. He said, don't make it a listening tour. Make it a dialogue because people are going to want to know your thoughts as well. So I called it 125 Days of Dialogue. Basically, it was a listening tour, though, and I was doing a lot of listening and trying to get to know all parts of this place. And I started in the summer working on staff offices and community members, community groups, alumni, industry partners. And then when the fall semester started, shifted my focus to student groups and faculty groups. And I learned a ton. I learned a ton about this place. And I keep saying the listening and the dialogue aren't over simply mm-hmm. because those 125 days are over. But those 125 days were very focused on really learning. It could have been 125 days of learning, you know.
Well, and the dialogue goes back to what got you into this boat in the first place is Coach and the idea that
right.
the dialogue is so important to you then.
Coach King.
There you go.
Yeah. Dennis King. Yeah. So, but from the beginning, I wanted everybody to know that this isn't going to be years and years of listening and dialoguing before we take action. I wanted everybody to know, hey, the listening and the dialogue is going to continue, but the point of this 125 days is to learn enough to set a direction. And so early on, I got with the team and Amanda Badovinic, Jody Jones, these folks who have been incredible support for me. And I said, let's set a date right after the 125 days is over. And that's going to be the time when I share what I've learned and set a firm direction. So we set October 14th, and it's a Tuesday. Tuesday has always been my favorite day of the week. So we set a Tuesday.
That's a discussion for later.
And Tuesday afternoon, and leading up to that, I knew that I've been making an impression, first impression, individually with all these groups that I've been meeting with. That's all very important. I gave a little bit of a talk, a welcome address at opening day, you know, during our welcome week before the fall semester started. But my point of that welcome was basically to welcome everybody back to campus and to say, hey, I'm still in the middle of learning about this place. So that's why I'm not setting priorities. That's why I'm not setting a direction yet. That's coming October 14th. October 14th, I knew was the day that I would be able to truly introduce myself to the Montana Tech world.
Mm-hmm.
And so in an even bigger way, that preparation was, I'll just say, very focused. More so, even more so than my interview.
Okay.
And I knew that I had a chance, and if I rose to that occasion, then the university could be set into a really good direction. And if I didn't, you know, it might go into a different direction. It's same kind of theme here, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I put together what I had learned and what I was learning somewhat early on, and it changed throughout those 125 days. You know, it was adjusting throughout. But the idea of this four-lane highway, this metaphor of a four-lane highway, which is what I talked about during this. Well, first, let me back up. What makes this place so special is the people, which we talked about a bit already, the community, the pride, the perseverance, the well-earned pride, and the open arms. If you just say, yes, I want to learn about this place and I think this place is good, the open arms that welcomes you into this place, and it's not just Butte or Montana Tech, it's both. The people make this place different. And this university's purpose is so unique and so focused. And Tim Elgren, our provost, said it really well during the opening welcome. He said he's never worked at a place with such clarity of purpose. And that's true. And Montana Tech is Montana STEM University. So much of a purpose of a university is what we do and what we don't do. And a lot of universities struggle with that, especially yeah. struggle with what they don't do. Montana Tech doesn't struggle with that. And so I called this convocation 125 Years of People and Purpose. And that title is really meaningful to me because people and purpose are what this place is all about. So then how do you define in more detail what this place's purpose is? Because just being a STEM university, that's great, but can we narrow it down a little?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we don't have a physics major. You know, we don't have a medical school here. We have nursing,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have a medical school, you know. We don't have a lot of STEM, mm-hmm. but we do have what we have. And so let's narrow down this purpose, this STEM school, into what we really do. And this metaphor of a four-lane highway I love because, first of all, I believe it captures everything that is going on this campus, in this four-lane highway. The four lanes are natural resources, infrastructure, health and well-being, and leadership and workforce development. Those four lanes capture everything that's happening. So one of the things I'm saying is, I'm not setting a new direction. I'm articulating the direction that this university has been on for a long time. And everybody here should see themselves in this four-lane highway. But it's also this metaphor of a highway that stretches into the future. And we're not done. Simon Sinek, I don't know if you know Simon Sinek. He's this public speaker. He speaks a lot about leadership. He says that... A lot of work these days is what he calls an infinite game. There's no finish line for Montana Technological University. We are headed in a direction, and next year we're still going to be on that road. And then the following year we're still going to be on. There's no finish line that we're going to, you know, cross and then say, oh, Montana Tech's work is now done.
Mm-hmm.
It's an infinite game.
Yep.
And this four-lane highway metaphor points forward into that future, and that I think is important because now we're moving forward and these are our four lanes. And the other piece of this that means a ton to me is about alignment. And the best way I can describe this is when a university doesn't have a clear purpose, different people across the university are going to be pushing in some direction. And if they're all pushing in different directions, you run the risk of tearing the university apart. But if we can align people into a similar direction, and in this case, if we can align people with a four-lane highway, now we're going to make progress. And that four-lane highway is pointed... This four lanes of natural resources, infrastructure, health and well-being, leadership and workforce development, those four lanes are aligned toward this purpose statement that I keep repeating, and I'm going to keep repeating it for years. And that purpose statement is that Montana Tech rises to meet America's emerging needs by preparing the next generation of STEM leaders. That purpose statement and that four-lane highway hits it for me. And I thought a long time about this. I talked with a lot of people. I built this talk for October 14th with that in mind. And then I said, all right, it can't just be a description of this purpose in this four-lane highway. We have to have a charge. And so I thought, well, I have my cabinet. I got 14 people, including myself, on this cabinet. So 13 people on this cabinet. I got to give each one of them a charge. And I got to do it in front of everybody.
Yep.
So I went to each one of them ahead of time. And I said, hey, just so you know,
I'm going to call you and everybody else out.
I'm going to give you a charge in front of everybody. I just didn't want to, you know, and this is the charge. And I told them, each mm-hmm. of them beforehand, you know, so they each knew what they're, and we had already talked about, I mean, these charges and these priorities.
They're not surprises.
No. They had been emerging through the 125 days.
Yep.
We talked a lot about what our priorities should be and everything. And so nothing was surprising. Nothing was new to them. But I think hearing that they were going to receive a charge in front of the rest of the campus and the world or whatever, you know, that raised some eyebrows. But I said, I have to do this because it has to be public. It has to be transparent. And there has to be some meaning behind this purpose statement and this four-lane highway metaphor. We actually have to take the step down the highway, you know, and start that momentum down the highway.
Rubber's got to get on the road.
Exactly. And the gas pedal needs to be depressed a little bit.
Yep. You know?
And so I gave our provost, Tim Elgren, the charge to create an academic roadmap. Vice Chancellor for Research, Dr. Katie Haler, write a research roadmap. And both of those roadmaps need to encompass all of our colleges and need to describe how each of those colleges is going to contribute to each lane. It's not one college is responsible for one lane, another college is responsible for another. Our colleges are responsible for all colleges are responsible for all lanes. Gave a charge to our vice provost and dean of students, Joe Cooper, and to Matt Steppen over the athletics department. You got to focus on leadership. That's lane four. And our student affairs and our athletics department should both be these opportunities for students outside of the classroom to learn the skills that they're going to need in life, whether they're going to be a leader in their industry, their community, or their family, they're going to be a leader. Because that's what Montana Tech's purpose is, to prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. And so student affairs and athletics have this unique opportunity where, I mean, you know, as in athletics, our student athletes spend more time with their coaches than anybody else.
Yeah.
And if our coaches aren't taking, I know they already are, but if they're not taking advantage of that opportunity to teach these student athletes how to be leaders in their industry, community, and family, we're missing the boat.
Yeah.
So let's take a very intentional approach. And you and Matt Steppen and the coaches are already working on that with this athletic leadership academy. I love the idea. Joe Cooper in student affairs is working on some peer mentorship, leadership development. I charged our executive directors of marketing and communications and of admissions and enrollment and our chief of staff to own the notion that Montana Tech is Montana's STEM university. One of the things I learned here when I got here was everybody looking in from the outside, everybody sees Montana Tech as Montana's STEM university, but something was preventing us from owning that notion. And I want them to have full permission. We got to own that notion. And I don't know if you saw, but we're starting with the marketing. We gave out coffee mugs at the holiday family dinner, and it says Montana STEM University right on the coffee mug. So we're owning it. I charged the Bureau, the Montana Bureau of Mines and Geology. I love this story. So I learned that for the first couple decades of the Bureau's existence, the chancellor or the president at the time of the university was the state geologist.
Okay.
And over time, eventually, there became a director of the of the Bureau, the state geologist who now reports to the chancellor. But for a long time, the chancellor or the president, we used to call it the president.
President, here, yeah.
Was the state geologist.
Are you still trying to make that happen again? You're like, so I want the big hat.
I love that story because I'm a geologist.
Exactly.
You know? And I think that we've had a lot of engineers as the presidents and chancellors here, but way back when we had geologists. And it's a full circle moment for me. It's another example of how I feel like, okay, I do belong here. This is a good fit, you know?
Yep.
But the other piece of that is that the university, if the chancellor or the president at the time was also the state geologist, that means the Bureau and the university were, the Bureau and the rest of the university were very well entwined, closely entwined. I think that we may have gotten away from that a little bit, where the Bureau is sometimes acting like a separate entity, which mm-hmm. in a way it is. It's its own, you know, it's in the government documents as a state agency, but it is part of the university. And so I charged the Bureau with more intentionally integrating with the academic side of the university and really contributing to our purpose of preparing the next generation of STEM leaders. In order to do that, they have to be more involved in students' lives. And so now the Bureau Director is attending Dean's Council meetings, and those communications are starting.
Awesome.
I charged the foundation with very specific priorities, renewable scholarships, prioritized capital projects, and what we're calling big ideas aligned with the four-lane highway. And an example of a big idea aligned with the four-lane highway is what the provost and the athletics director and our dean of students are working on. They're working on building a STEM Leadership Institute. And the STEM Leadership Institute is going to have – it's still in development, but right now the plan is to have four pillars: academics, athletics, student affairs, and a research/entrepreneurship pillar.
Solid.
And this STEM Leadership Institute is a big idea. And so maybe some folks will want to contribute to that big idea as we really take an intentional approach to leadership. And then finally, I charged our Vice Chancellor for Administration and Finance to make sure that our HR, our people, our facilities and our financial resources are all aligned with our four-lane highway. And it's coming together. Each one of those cabinet members is taking it seriously. They've bought in, and we are making progress down the four-lane highway. Our roadmaps are being constructed. Our leadership focus is growing. Our messaging and recruiting efforts are getting better, more and more aligned with this idea of meeting America's emerging needs by preparing next generation STEM leaders, four-lane highway, owning this notion that we're the STEM university in Montana. Our foundation is collaborating well with our admissions team, for example, on our scholarshiping strategy. It's coming together.
Yeah, and you're seeing those strides already. I mean, October 14th, both feels like it was forever ago, and obviously it's not that long ago, but we're talking a span of 2 months, basically, and you're seeing strides and happy with progress to this point?
Yeah, it was like 75, 80 days ago.
You know?
So I had my first 125 days. We haven't even gotten to the second 125 days yet. Yeah. But yeah, we're making strides, and a lot is happening. So, you know, I spent that first 125 days doing as much listening, dialoguing, learning as I could, building this path. October 14th came, I described it, and I'm asking my cabinet to buy in and to align. And that idea of alignment is very important to me. And since then, I've adjusted my how I allocate my time more externally. And I've been spending a lot of time traveling. October and November and part of December were all, I mean, I was out a lot. And I've been meeting with industry partners. I took a leadership team to Idaho National Lab to build partnership with Idaho National Lab to start a nuclear energy program, or actually a few nuclear energy programs here, a certificate in nuclear energy, a master's degree in nuclear energy, and a PhD in nuclear, or sorry, in energy, and basically a PhD in energy. And Idaho National Lab is going to help us out. I spent time down in Texas and Arizona visiting some of the companies that have hired our students and our graduates, and who give our current students internships, companies like Hexagon, EpiRock, Pathfinder, Profrac, these companies in Houston and Midland, Texas, and in Tucson, Arizona. I spent some time in Washington, D.C., getting to know and kind of immersing myself in these Department of Energy conversations, where the U.S. Department of Energy right now is so focused on critical
minerals
and materials that are so important for our technology and so important for our defense systems. And they're hyper focused right now. Our federal government's hyper focused on the quickly increasing energy needs in our country and across the world, and trying to figure out the answers of how to address the energy demands that are growing like wildfire. And Montana Tech, more than any other university that I know of, is so well positioned for both of those topics, with our long history with mining, our industry partnerships, our location here, our geography and our geology here. It all comes together with critical materials. And then our long history with petroleum engineering and our focus on energy. And now we're starting to think, okay, everybody's starting to think, okay, petroleum has to be part of the, especially the near-term future. Yep. But we gotta think through more energy sources than just petroleum. And so we sent a team to Iceland and England to learn about how their geothermal systems are working, and they're bringing that information back. And we're thinking through geothermal in the state of Montana. Nuclear energy is a huge
It is a hot button, that's for sure.
Hot button topic. And yeah. And just to be clear, Montana Tech isn't taking a stance on whether or not nuclear energy is a good thing or a bad thing. We're not taking a stance on whether data centers are a good thing or a bad thing. So, you know, on and on and on. Well, that's not our role. Our role is to look into the future and say, is nuclear likely to be a part of the energy portfolio?
Yes.
Yes, it's likely to be part of the energy portfolio. Are data centers likely going to be part of America's future? Yes, data centers are likely going to be part of America's future. And so how can Montana Tech make sure that we're providing and preparing the next generation of STEM leaders? And we need to do it in an environmentally responsible way. Mm-hmm. And Montana Tech has more history than anywhere else in Montana and almost anywhere else in the world. We were definitely one of the first five environmental engineering programs in the country back in 1975. Environmental engineering and all of the stuff that we're doing in environmental is hugely important. So we have to do this in a responsible way.
Yep.
And having all of that here, and that's just in our natural resources lane. We're not even talking about our infrastructure and our health and well-being and our leadership and workforce development lanes. And we have similar great stories in each of those lanes. So yeah, we're making huge progress. And my personal focus and some of the focus of the leadership team has been to start to, you know, look outwardly and start to build up some of these partnerships that we know we're going to need in order to meet these needs.
Yeah.
And it's going well, but we're just getting started.
You have to be like a kid in a candy store, because I feel like you operate in a personal lane of you just any kind of information you can pull into yourself, it just makes you happier. The more you can learn, the happier it feels like you are. And the amount of information that you have been flooded with now for 7 months, you just have to be ecstatic.
And we're just getting started.
Yeah.
And you know, we could go on and on about our health and well-being lane. We could go on and on about our leadership. You know, this Leadership Institute, the STEM Leadership Institute, I'm really excited about. I think it's got a lot of legs, and here's why. Montana Tech has always led out in preparing technical skills.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
We also know that some of our graduates have gone on to be national and global leaders. Mm-hmm. And a couple of examples are you know, the most obvious examples, Ryan Lance, CEO of ConocoPhillips, hugely important on the national and global scale. He's an alum of Montana Tech. Kyle Housefight is now the assistant secretary of energy for the United States. And he just graduated like fewer than 10 years ago. I mean, this guy's young. We are creating these leaders here. And I think that we've been doing it organically. If we can change that organic approach to leadership to an intentional approach, sky's the limit.
Yeah.
And then we get, you know, just so I don't want to leave anybody out, you know, we get back to our health and well-being lane. Our nursing program is knocking it out.
It's lights out.
It's unreal.
They're so good.
They are so good. And our NCLEX scores are off the charts. We're leading the state in our NCLEX scores. We just increased the capacity and of our enrollment capacity in the program,
which our nursing program has busted at the seams from year one.
It's unbelievable, and they're maintaining this high quality. And it's not just me saying, "Oh yeah, we're maintaining high quality." Our NCLEX scores are evidence of the high quality. Our RadTech program at Highlands College is bursting at the seams. There are not enough opportunities in the hospitals and in the clinics for the demand that we have in our RadTech program. We've maxed out the clinical opportunities. We have more. We could teach more students, but the students need those clinical opportunities, and there aren't enough hospitals to provide the clinical opportunities. People want our programs. Our health and well-being lane is rocking right now, and there's still some opportunities for us that we're exploring right now, especially related to biomedical research and with rural health. And so one of the questions we're trying to answer is, what is Montana Tech's role in the rural health environment of Montana? And so we're still exploring that, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, this is just the first. You and I are going to chat not only here on Roll Digs, but we'll check in during basketball games every once in a while. We'll check in and see what's new. And the same goes when we get into fall. We get into volleyball. We get into football. When we've got some people involved, we'll chat. We'll find out how that four-lane highway is cruising along, and any new on-ramps or possible off-ramps, we'll look forward to discuss.
I love sticking with the metaphor. And we haven't even scratched the surface on athletics.
We haven't even gone there.
We didn't even get to athletics. So I appreciate the opportunity.
I have bogarted so much of your time, it's not even funny.
Oh, this is
because
awesome.
I have one question still. You and JC, your bride, have ingrained yourself into not only the Montana Tech community neck deep, and the same goes for the Butte community. What are the things that you have learned about us that you are now a part of? What are the big things you pulled away that were surprises to you? What are the things that like you never thought to look at or to focus on that you have just found yourself in love with in our community as of now?
I'll tell you,
because you've had so much free time, about 15 to maybe 16 minutes a day.
I'm learning all the time. What I expected was a Butte against the world vibe, because you hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is, you know, I imagine there may be certain circumstances where that makes sense.
Yes.
But what I found is that Butte is the most welcoming place I've ever been to to those who want to be here and learn about it and explore this place and be part of it. And that's what I want. And I would, you know, I don't necessarily want this place to grow, you know, to 100,000 people or anything. But if anybody is interested in Butte, they are going to love this place. That's what I've learned here. And the same goes for Montana Tech. They are too intertwined to separate.
Yeah.
Butte and Montana Tech, and that's unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know that a lot of, you know, that in the higher ed business, people talk a lot about the town gown relationship, the relationship between the town and the university, and how it's a struggle sometimes, and how people, you know, how there's this sense of elitism, or there's this sense of that, what have you done for me lately kind of thing. Maybe that's been part of the history here. I don't know, but it sure isn't part of the present. There just seems to be such a support from the community for Montana Tech and such a support from Montana Tech for the community. And I love it.
Speaking for myself, we love that you're here. Every time I talk to you, it's just something new, and the life you have on campus cannot be understated. So I look forward to chatting in the future, and maybe next time we'll discuss athletics.
I'd love to. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, our chancellor, have a great new year. Have a great Christmas. Hopefully you get to see your family a little bit, and hopefully you get a little time off.
I will, and it's going to be relaxing, and I hope the same for you and your family and all the listeners.
Once again, my thanks to Chancellor Johnny McClain for sitting down with me today, and I have to apologize to him because we had discussed about what we were going to talk about and, you know, where we were going to go and kind of the direction. And I believe I tore that script up in the first maybe 13, possibly 14 seconds. But Chancellor McClain, again, has just done a tremendous job. And again, if you have not watched his convocation, you can find that on the Montana Tech page, not the athletic page, but the actual Montana Tech page. It's a little over an hour, if memory serves correct, and it is worth all your time to get a great idea of what our chancellor wants to see in the future here for Montana Tech. So again, my thanks to Chancellor McClain, and my thanks to you for joining us. This is Roll Digs, the official podcast of Montana Tech Athletics. I hope you have a great Christmas and a great new year. We've got a lot of stuff on the horizon, and we look forward to what's coming up shortly. Until next time, take care.